This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow the Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us in.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network. And with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. Well, today we're going to talk about one of the cliches that I was most excited to talk about, which is the last half of Season 2's propensity for just defaulting to this alien planet just happens to be exactly like Earth.
Yeah.
Whether in the past or an alternate past or an alternate future, it's just like Earth. And we're not really going to bother explaining how it came to be. Well, sometimes they do, and other times it's kind of questionable.
And even when they do, it's kind of questionable.
Well, it's definitely questionable. Each one, of course, is... I had forgotten, but even in Bread and Circuses, each episode, the culture isn't the fault of Federation and Bread and Circuses. But the alternate cultures are the fault in Piece of the Action and Patterns of Force. Even if you take or leave the Prime Directive, it's probably a bad idea to start Nazis in an alien planet.
Maybe, yes. I think history on Earth has proven that Nazis on any planet, probably not a good idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even if you take into account science fiction. And
yes.
How. Though I think a science fiction, any kind of science fiction show that portrayed the Nazis or Nazism or that kind of concept in a positive light would probably be frowned upon.
Yeah, I don't think that would work out too well. I don't think you'd get a lot of fans that way.
No. Unless, yeah, no. I'm not even going to go there. So we're going to be talking about three of the episodes. The three biggest offenders, I would have called them the let's see what Paramount has in the back lot, but after reading the memos and stuff in Cushman's book on Season 2, I found that these were all concepts that they'd already had or that other people had come up with, and it was in no way budget stretching, even if they ended up stretching the budget with some of the costumes. It wasn't like, let's write an episode around this costume that I found in the back lot.
Well, but at the same time, I think when they were coming up with these ideas, whether or not it was in the memos, there was sort of a thinking of, not let's see what's on the back lot, but I know what's on the back lot. We've got to have a lot of gangster costumes. Let's do a gangster planet, you know? I think that, and I mean, that's actually in the Bible of the show.
Yeah. Know? Well, the first one that we'll go through is Bread and Circuses, which really doesn't recycle that much costuming-wise. There are some terrible plastic, you know, helmets and so forth. The episode is actually pretty interesting with the, as far as you can believe the, you know, theory of parallel Earths. We've got a Roman society that never fell. And they, even though the Romans never fell, they somehow developed English. And mm-hmm. It's actually pointed out in the episode that they are speaking English.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly so the pun of the followers of the sun pun would work, because it would be hard for the Universal Translator to... The chances of a parallel society coming up with an alien language where the thing your planet orbits around and the male child of you... is the same word, sounding word, that'd be a stretch.
Yeah, I can buy, you know, an alternate planet where there was an alternate history where, you know, the Roman Empire never fell and everything like that. But the idea of another language where sun and sun are both pronounced the same way, no.
Yeah.
That's crossing the line right there.
Which is why they just made him develop English, which
makes
is,
a lot
is
more
just
sense.
As bad as Stargate, but
no.
Anyway, So we've got a lot of gladiator stuff in this episode. Not so much recycled, because they came up with the idea of it being more a skewing of television than, you know, a Sliders-esque what-if situation. And they focus on the TV parody thing so much that NBC was telling them to cut back a bit, because they were going to broadcast the gladiatorial games in living color, which was NBC's catchphrase for their color shows. So they had to change it to just in color.
Aww,
it's too yeah. Because they were like, wait a minute, you're making fun of us with this. And the quest for ratings and making people fight for them. But the Federation in this one, they got caught in these games and forced to, this captain was forced to sacrifice his entire crew in the Gladiator games, in the Hunger Games. No, wait. So it's not really his fault. And, you know, Kirk is just like checking on him. So it's not really, it's not the Federation's fault that this society exists, which is more than we can say for the other two we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But Bread and Circuses, it's not terrible. It's not overly good. And I'm grateful that it's not, you know, an entire ripoff of What's in the Backlot this week episode.
Yeah. You know, I remember Mark Cushman, I think, telling us that the original concept for the episode was to be a lot more humorous. And I kind of would have loved to have seen that version of this episode. I still think that the episode works okay. It's not one of my favorites, but I think it's decent. Isn't this the episode where we get McCoy telling us that he's a doctor, not an elevator?
I don't know.
I think so, because he's like
it could be.
'Cause he's like helping the woman down some rocks or something, right?
No, that's Friday's Child.
Oh, same thing. Whatever. Okay, so it's not.
Wait,
that
what?
One.
That's not the same
okay.
thing.
Okay, whatever. They're all the same. Because
it's helping a pregnant lady.
Okay,
that's what the.
Yeah, I just see son, and I get
oh,
them all
okay.
confused. You know, they're all the same. But you know, this is kind of a case of what they had pitched in the original Bible, which is like the many worlds theory. I think is what they call it, right? Where mm-hmm. it is like a scientific theory where, you know, if the universe is infinite, then there are infinite possibilities. And that means that somewhere out there is another Earth where, you know, everything is the same except Barack Obama was not elected president, you know? And it's like, okay, well, then if that happens, then everything else is different, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
The problem, of course, with this whole, you know, concept is that you're not going to be able to find any of those in our galaxy. And I know that the original series had some scale issues, but even if you were to expand it, you're not going to find any of those in your lifetime or your kid's lifetime or anything else to infinity's lifetime, yeah. You know?
And so, maybe you'll find one.
Yeah, and that would be really freaking weird. And that would, like, blow your mind. And it would be, like, the biggest, you know, scientific discovery in the history of mankind. But it's TV, so I'm willing to accept it.
Like, you'd think they'd be freaking out more in Miri when they find a planet that not only is Earth-like, it has the same continents.
Yeah.
And they're just like, huh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I guess, you know, in this universe, in the Star Trek universe, there's a whole bunch of them. Chances are much higher.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess it does exist, right? I mean, somewhere out there has to be another place called Earth where two people named Drew and Mike are sitting here talking about Star Trek. And the only difference is that you're wearing a Kill Bill shirt and I'm wearing an Indiana Jones shirt instead of the other way around.
Oh. See, that's very Sliders-esque. And the problem I always had with Sliders was, okay, every decision anybody makes creates a parallel world. Why couldn't they have slid into a world where that was the case today, where we were wearing different shirts?
Yeah.
And that's the only difference. No, they always find something where, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge is blue and everybody's evil, or they never discovered penicillin, or there are dinosaurs. It's like, wait.
Right. Yeah, I know. Like Max was describing it to me at one point, and he's like, yeah, you know, I mean, there's going to be another Earth where it's like the same as here, except there's going to be one atom which is turned like 90 degrees to the right, and that's the only difference, you know? And it's true, but it's crazy.
Yeah.
I guess the universe is pretty big, all things considered.
Yeah, yeah. Especially multiverse, if you go inside parallel dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing in Cushman's book here is a quote from Robertson, the NBC guy who would comment on the scripts and so forth and give story ideas even. He really wanted to see this. The network wanted the series to succeed. And this is really great for Bread and Circuses. Robertson said, "This should be our final story of the forthcoming season in which we update or attempt to go back and examine a society, system, or civilization of the past. While this is not exactly a time tunnel type gimmick, I strongly believe that while such stories may be intriguing to write and do contain a certain amount of visual excitement, they can become tired and, carried to any further extreme, such stories could give Star Trek a feeling of duplication or similarity. We both know that we can find the type of action-adventure stories we were looking for without overdoing what I think is an easy way out to create excitement and appeal." Which is great for, you know, the third episode of that season where they had done that, and the, you know, third of eight of the whole season where they continued to do that.
So, didn't exactly take the network's advice on that one.
No.
Which is kind of weird because, I mean... And it's interesting, and it kind of shows that Robertson, that was his name, right? Robertson, mm-hmm. did have a good idea of what the show was, and he wasn't just sort of like a money-minded, you know, studio head. Because you would think that the note from the studio would be like, "This is good, and by good I mean cheap. Let's do this again next week." You know,
exactly.
That's cool. That's cool.
The next episode that we'll cover really quick is a piece of the action. We've already discussed a piece of the action a couple times. We did a commentary on it. We pitched it as a movie with Max. But it's kind of the big offender, I think. You know, it uses the New York sets. It
For Chicago. It, you know,
right. Of course.
It's terrible.
It uses the New York sets. It uses, you know... All the background characters have the same hat. Like, it's obviously was very cheap for them to make. They didn't use the sets, but apparently the set designer had worked on the Untouchables. So, you know, he had experience doing the whole mob set dressing and building the sets and stuff. Which you'd think that there was probably something filming at the time that could have just been like... I mean, if I was doing a series like this, I'd be like, "Hey, what are you guys shooting? Mission Impossible? Mind if we use this set?" Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That happens occasionally.
Crossovers, that'd be really cool.
I think they did that with Raiders and Das Boot.
Did they?
Yeah, because they didn't have enough money to buy the boat for Das Boot. And then Raiders of the Lost Ark is like, "We need a boat for one scene. And we've got tons of money, so let's pool our resources." So the boat in Das Boot is also the boat in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Huh.
Yeah.
But a piece of the action, again, we've got Federation influence, but this is before the Prime Directive, and they left behind the Chicago Mobs of the 20s book, which somehow the natives learned to read and to adapt, and you know, we've already made fun of them for figuring out how to not only like guns, but manufacture guns and cars and things that I'm sure which weren't fully explained in the book. Like how a combustion engine works.
To be fair, it was a really big book.
It was very big. And it's in Enterprise in an episode. Mayweather has one on his shelf.
Really?
That's interesting. He does.
Is it possible? That's cute. Is it possible, since this was a, you know, future book, that maybe it was some sort of advanced holographic iPad thing with like tabs that you could click on where it's like combustion engine, and then you click on that and there's like a hot link and then it tells you how to build one?
It could be, but each mob boss has a copy.
Well, maybe there's a thing,
maybe
with
it
like,
manufactures itself.
Yeah, like holographic books, and then you click on that and it's like, here's how you make holographic books.
Push this to self-replicate. Bloop.
Yeah.
Could be, could be.
Yeah.
But again, this isn't, as cheap as it was to make, it's not like they were digging around and being like, oh, look, fedoras. We should do a 20s episode. This was, like you said, was in the story Bible. It was, you know, one of the first concepts of, I think it was called President Capone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be more of a direct parallel. It wasn't going to be, you know, influence and, you know, discussing the Prime Directive and stuff. As goofy as the episode is, it does cover the Prime Directive and how important that is, and how sometimes you have to play along with the natives in order to limit your influence over their society.
Yeah, and even though, like, this is something which was a concept that they had going back to the beginning, I don't think that we need to, you know, assume that they were being completely innocent in this and not thinking about money, because I think when they were creating that Bible and they were creating their show ideas and stuff like that, they made a conscious effort to say, what's a story that we could do where we're using these things,
right,
that we can show the network to show that we can do this on the cheap, you know?
Well, the story Bible, the pitch thing flat out says,
right,
it flat out says, look, all the aliens are going to be, you know, we're going to have some kind of evolutionary theory that everybody evolves to look like humans, mm-hmm, and it's going to make things really easy for you guys.
Yeah. And the network's like, what did you think we were going to do? Of course you are. No, but yeah. I mean, I do think that, you know, they were like, yeah, here's this idea that we have with this many worlds theory, and here's an example of what we would do with that. Makes sense.
But he couldn't have predicted that they would be able to use the Paramount backlot after they got bought out, because they hadn't gotten bought out. I'm sure they could have just gone there and used it anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd figure it out somehow. Yeah.
Sure, it was cheaper after they got bought out.
Yeah.
Than it being like a cross studio promotion thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a piece of the action. If you want more information, you can find our other episodes on it and our thoughts on it. But I felt like it needed to be included in this cliche set, because it's kind of, you can't not mention it. And we get in trouble if we don't mention things.
Yeah.
Which I'm not mentioning all of them. Let me say that right now, because as we do get letters of people being like, well, you forgot to mention this episode. Well, no, we're just trying to focus on three episodes at a time so that we don't overload ourselves with trying to keep the episode straight.
Sometimes we don't pick the three best examples of that, though. And
yeah.
Sometimes we're like, ah, that was bad.
Yeah.
Like with the balance of terror thing and... In our racism
episode. Yes, we forgot Balance of Terror in the racism episode, and that was a big mistake.
So continue to call us out on these things.
Right. But don't be upset. Just be helpful. The last episode we'll talk about today is Patterns of Force, which deserves a bigger conversation because of Nazism and that whole idea, and the idea that maybe we can do it right this time. But it seems to be, even though, again, you know, none of the memos are just like, oh, we found these Nazi uniforms left over from, you know, all these movies people be making, so let's, you know, use them. It's a genuine story about a Federation historian who decides that he can make the society better. The society's tearing itself apart, and so he's like, look, you know, we can be efficient and make the trains run on time if we maybe pattern ourselves after this. I don't see why he had to pattern it exactly after the Nazis. Like, you can have that concept and not have the swastikas and the SS uniforms and, you know, the banners and the parades and you can do it other ways, I'm sure. I've not thought of it. I'm not Anakin Skywalker. I'm not gonna overthrow the galaxy because I think one man could do it better.
Yeah. But what you're saying does make sense. Some of these things, some of this iconography, you'd think that maybe if he was thinking, we're going to do it right this time, maybe he would say, like, maybe we shouldn't use a lot of this, you know, iconography, which is associated with this other thing. Not that those people would necessarily know, but...
No, they wouldn't get it.
Still, you think that he'd
And maybe
like,
he started without the iconography, and they, you know, picked up his books or whatever, his holographic Nazi books.
Yeah, that could be.
And was just like, hey, we could keep going like this. They did this. That seems cool.
Yeah.
And then they stopped reading it, apparently, before they got to the end. They stopped reading before it fell apart.
They got to the part about the burning of the books, and then they were like, Oh, wait. Oh,
wait, no.
Oh.
That's good. That's a good one. It completely threw me off. Now, and of course, it does make it cheaper. Them using all the iconography means you don't have to make Nazi-esque banners that mm-hmm. don't have swastikas.
Yeah. I guess there is a budgetary thing. And there's also, I mean, the thing that we need to keep in mind here is that this is a work of art, you know, and this is something which is trying to communicate a message to people. And that iconography is so powerful, you know, in our society that you throw that up on a screen and it's going to be an instant reaction from the audience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So creatively speaking, whatever the reason is behind them doing this in terms of the story logic, like the reason behind them doing it in terms of creative logic is very sound and strong. And sometimes you can't pack a completely story logical reason into a 50-minute television show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it helps with the sale of said episode.
Yeah.
Like the promotional stills of, you know, Kirk in a Nazi uniform is powerful
mm-hmm.
for the audience. If it was something like, oh, you know, they find a planet that's like Nazis, but not really, it would be harder for them to sell. This episode, I think, to me, contains the biggest, like, blatant reuse of uniforms from other movies, because like the hero uniforms, hero, that's stretching it, the biggest quality costumes that keep closest to the cameras,
hero in the costume sense,
right?
Yeah,
well, Kirk's wearing them, so
okay. I mean, yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but the biggest thing is that the uniforms that they wear are for Hitler's personal bodyguards.
Mm-hmm.
That, and they even have Adolf Hitler bands that say, have his like a signature on them,
mm-hmm.
which shows that they're exclusive, you know, Adolf Hitler bodyguards. And they get these uniforms from just like random people.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, these are the nicest uniforms we have.
Right.
What are they, you know, what were they used for? Who cares? So I guess that's what they just did for, you know, we can bring this back in universe, the historical book. Only really had a close-up of this one uniform.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah, so that's the uniform that they replicated.
That makes sense.
They don't speak English, so, you know, the name on the band doesn't really enter into them.
Or German.
It makes just as much sense to them as the swastika.
Yeah, yeah.
Could be. Okay. I'm complaining and then justifying it to myself.
They think that it's like a brand name, like Calvin Klein.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Let's slide to that alternate universe where Adolf Hitler designed clothes.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
But had they kept all the Nazi paraphernalia stuff out of it, they would have been able to have aired this episode in Germany before 1999.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is crazy. But mm-hmm. I understand why they would push it back. But.
Yeah, I guess if you need to sacrifice a single episode of Star Trek in order to sort of maintain your society, that's a reasonable reasonable thing to do, reasonable choice to make.
Yeah. I think of these three, this one is the one that makes the most sense. They had, I mean, the most sense of as to why it was identical to Earth, in that a guy was designing it to be as identical to Earth as he could.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, you know, well, we found this book, or, you know, oh, we just happened to have evolved exactly the same way, but the Roman Empire never fell.
Right. There was actually a guy who had a plan.
Yes.
Yeah.
To make it exactly like that. So, right. I mean, I'll give it that. They figured out the story elements, you know, eighth time around. They might as well have figured it out.
It's hard work, you know? But if you keep at it, eventually you'll crack the code.
And then you can do episodes like Fairhaven.
Yeah. See?
Once you get a holodeck, you can do whatever you want.
Yep.
Or you can do like the one where the Voyager crew is the French Resistance against those hunter people. The Hirogen. The Hirogen.
The Hirogen, yes.
I can pronounce things. Well, it was fun talking about parallel Earth development today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
They look at the original series episodes, and they see thematically what it is that works, and they pick that in order to explore like a different side of it.
Earl Grey.
No, do you guys seriously not know why they have red and green lights?
No. Not all of us have read Ships of the Line.
Okay, no.
Wait, is this a Ship of the Line? I'm only in, like, chapter one.
No, I'm talking about, like, real ships today.
Have you been on a ship, Darren?
The Orb.
Them being adversarial, I don't think necessarily was the only way they could have gone. It makes for a great story, but it just made me wonder, just an impossible universe, what would have happened.
I think it's important, though, that she, as the religious leader, is not sold on the idea that this outsider is their emissary.
To the journey!
Endgame cannot make my list.
I don't have as much hatred for Endgame as you or apparently everybody else does.
Oh, not that I'm bitter or anything, no.
Warp 5.
So I would argue in the case of what Paxton is doing here in firing a weapon at San Francisco, which luckily missed and went into the bay, and I don't know if I guess George and Gracie aren't there right in the 22nd century, so they're okay, but...
The Ready Room.
They could have really diverged with what we knew of Will and made Thomas's own unique character. I mean, he is, but, like, if we can get multiple Burial episodes, why can't Thomas Riker have more than one episode?
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And he happens to figure it all out. Yeah, that's enough to drive an audience.
We need to get Will Wheaton on the show because I will defend Wesley in this episode against the guy who played Wesley.
Okay.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
There was an interview, I think, with JJ where they were talking to him and he was saying that, you know, oh, my dad was friends with Nicholas Meyer back in the day. I remember going to Meyer's house when I was a kid.
And he had a whole bunch of really cool things in his house, and I thought, I would like to break some of these.
Literary Treks.
But I do like
I
want to
see Spock with a perm.
Oh, gosh. Well,
I think I've got a Photoshop project in my future with this cover right here.
Melodic Treks.
It's like, oh, this happened! Oh, this is so good! It was!
That's no
it was
joke.
Just
that
amazing!
Is how she reacts. And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. Let's tell everybody where they can contact us if they want to share their thoughts on any of the concepts that we talked about today. You can go to Trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the left-hand side of any column to send a voicemail using your webcam's microphone, or you can talk to us and our other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars with Max. This week is our 100th episode in which we will be covering Robert Wise's work as an editor on Citizen Kane. So look out for that. And then you can also find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, where we do commentary track stars off topic. And you can find me on Twitter at mumbles3k.
Are you guys going to do Sound and Music or just following his editing path?
All we're going to do is look at Citizen Kane, the one movie which he was nominated for editing. And the reason why we're doing it for our 100th episode is because for our 100th episode of Commentary Track Stars, we did a commentary for Citizen Kane. So we thought it would be a nice parallel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Thanks. Thanks.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DUUBLEOFIVE, and on various other places around the internet. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
I have a book written by Nancy Reagan entitled Star Trek and History. The description says, for a series set in our future, Star Trek revisits the past constantly. Kirk and Spock battle Nazis, Roman gladiators, and witness the Great Depression. When they're not doubling back on their own earlier timelines, the crew uses the holodeck to spend time in the American Old West or Victorian England. Alien races have their own complex and fascinating histories, too. The Star Trek universe is a sci-fi imagining of a future world that is rooted in our own human history. Gene Roddenberry created a television show with a new world and new rules in order to comment on social and political issues of the 1960s. And you can get this book for free since you listen to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And lastly, there's another way that you can help keep us in orbit, and that's by supporting the network directly through Patreon. Patreon.com/trekfm is the place to go so that you can find ways that you can donate, pledge to donate monthly to help support the network, to cover the cost of bandwidth and hosting and all the other things that cost money for podcasts that we can't really cover ourselves. So you'll find that there. There are different reward levels depending on how much you pledge. And some of them are really cool. Like you get exclusive access to our project page where you can interact with us directly and give us suggestions on possible topics and sit in on recordings, be on the show, be mentioned as an associate producer of the show, all kinds of cool stuff. So you can check that out at patreon.com/trekfm.
Maybe for our bonus content for Patreon, we could do like an alternate series where we talk about like a gangster show instead of the original series. Like maybe we do an Untouchables, like Untouchable Orbit or Standard Untouchable. That doesn't work.
Okay.
Well. Something like that, you know?
I could do that.
Yeah.
If it's available on Netflix.
I'm not doing whatever. That. But yeah, we could do that, but we're not going to.
No.
We'll think of something, though.
Yeah. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Link.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.